week of May 12th, 2019, this is Showbiz Sandbox, episode 448, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news making headlines around the entertainment world. In London, England, I'm Jay Sperling Reich.
Jolly good cup of tea, Sperling.
I have no idea what you just said.
Well, you're going to feel very lonely in London. I am here in New York. You're in London. You're on your way to Cannes. You've been traipsing all over England. You've seen the Avengers there. You've gone to dinner there at the BAFTA cinema space. You're having yourself a grand old time, aren't you?
Yes, but now who is I? You didn't really introduce yourself.
Me, I is Michael. It's in New York City, I'm Michael Giltz. If they're listening to the show, they know that. They're old. they're friends we've had for years. I'm in their head. It must be scary.
Well, yeah, actually, I was hoping to see a couple of longtime listeners here in the UK, but I'm here for such a short period of time for a couple of meetings before heading, as you mentioned, Michael, to the Cannes Film Festival in the south of France our annual trek there.
You mean yours.
I guess, yeah. Yes. It used to be ours, but
it
then
used
you just...
to be ours, but then I money disappeared, the internet took over, and I'm out of work. So
by the way, if you can hear that sound behind me,
nope.
that's the overground. So if you hear a train passing by every 5 seconds, that is literally the overground. Instead of the underground, there's now an overground as well.
I can see you spared no expense in your lodging.
That is correct. I am living in a van under the bridge.
Well, you know, you're in London and I'm in New York. It's Sunday afternoon, early evening. So that's when we're recording the show. I just got out of a play. I saw Octet by David Malloy, the guy who did Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812. It's a fun little piece about internet addiction and done with 8 singers performing a cappella numbers. So it's as human-oriented a way of dealing with technology that you could ask for. Interesting, good piece at the Signature Theater Company. But meanwhile, while you're traveling and I'm seeing theater, every 5 minutes there's a new announcement of a show being canceled, a renewal. It's you know, the upfront's time for all the networks, and they're all making all their displays. So the information is coming fast and furious.
Yeah, so this is the time of year when the networks kind of invite all of the advertisers to New York City and all the ad agencies to New York City. They get on stage, they bring out all of their talent, and they say, guess what, guys? This is the schedule for next
fall.
Well,
they don't have schedules anymore. You know, they're all saying, look, the fall schedule, that's, you know, the idea of a fall launch, it means nothing. Spring launch, summer launch, mid-season launch, it's all great. We love everything. We're year-round. These schedules are flexible. We're ordering short orders of shows now, maybe 13 episodes of Brooklyn Nine-Nine on NBC rather than the standard 20 or 22 for a major network. You know, everything is up in the air. People are programming year-round, and while summer shows still tend to be reality and less expensive when it comes to the major networks, we know there's just a constant stream of television, and this is proof of it, because half the shows that get canceled and half the shows that they're renewing, I'm like, I don't even know what that is. There are so many TV shows out there.
Yeah, I mean, you were telling me about some show that Matt LeBlanc was on, and I think my thought was the same as yours, which is, Matt LeBlanc's on a TV show?
That's right. It's the fourth season of his sitcom, which I knew he had. I just forgot it was still ongoing. Who can keep track? But some shows are really big. I know people in Cannes are saying, how are we going to watch Game of Thrones, the series finale? Where are we going to watch it? They should just put it out on the beach and let everybody see it.
Wait a second. It's the finale, the last episode of Game of Thrones.
It's next Sunday.
It's
next Sunday.
That is hilarious, because every year there is some... show that some big show, and one year it was Mad Men, and I remember everybody raced home to like watch the final episode, and everybody was like, you know, huddled around their computers watching the final episode, and I hadn't caught up yet, so I was like, la 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 la, I can't hear you.
One year I stayed up until the middle of the night or early morning and skipped the first screening to watch the season finale of American Idol. Because I had to write about it.
I remember that, actually. I remember that.
I had to write about it, so I had to be... I was blogging about it for the whole season. I couldn't stop with the finale. You know, so those shows punch through the noise to make people pay attention. That's certainly true for the NBC drama This Is Us. And NBC just re-upped... they just one-upped everyone by saying, we're renewing the show not for 1 year, not for 2 years, but for 3 years. And
really,
to cap it off, they said it's only in its third season, and now they're saying there's going to be three more seasons, and then the show is done. They are mapping their end game. It's going to be, you know, they're saying three more years, and then we're going to build to a finale that will be the end of the show. It gives us every opportunity to tell the story we want to tell in the way we want to do it. So I think that encourages people to come on board. It encourages other people to know, hey, this isn't going to last forever. Lets them be more creative and satisfying rather than saying, how can we spin this out for 10 years? They're saying, no. This is our plan. We want everyone to know it, and we're going to do it, and this is where we're headed. I think it's interesting.
And by the way, Disney called. They want some commission on that, the use of that word endgame.
Do they? There you go. Yeah, it used to be Marvel that would have called, but who knew they owned Endgame? But the British don't own short runs of series, but they certainly pioneered it a lot overseas. A lot of shows would, you know, get a 6-episode run and then come back 2 years later and have another 6 episodes and then stop. Or 10 episodes or 8 episodes, run whatever length of time you want. So when I see what all the American networks and all the cable channels and all the streamers are doing, it makes me feel like we're catching up to what the British are doing.
Well, I can tell you exactly what the British are doing. They're about to go to bed, okay? Mm-hmm. Because it's really late here.
Well, it's not that late, but they did just hand out the BAFTA awards. And we're just, again, this is happening as we come on the air. But I can see that Killing Eve won Best Drama, as well as Best Actress, well-deserved for Jodie Comer as Villanelle. And Fiona Shaw won for Best Supporting Actress, playing the boss at MI6 of Sandra Oh's main character, Eve. So great wins for that TV show. Patrick Melrose won Best Miniseries, along with Benedict Cumberbatch, who got nominated a lot, but I think this is his first BAFTA win. And Best International Show is HBO's Succession, which is, you know, one reason we pay attention to all these award shows. That reminds me, yeah, that's a show I really want to check out. And well, people who want to check out our show. Ready for the segue? And
people
People who want to check out our show, Sperling, tell them what they're going to hear about.
Well, this week on Showbiz Sandbox, we've gone on a diet. Sort of, not really. It's slightly slimmed down. Okay, that's what we're talking about. A slightly slimmed down version of the show since I'm in London, as I mentioned, and I'm headed to Cannes. We've got box office, sexual misconduct news, and obituaries, but no main feature, and a very brief inside baseball. If the show still runs over an hour, Michael will break down in tears of frustration.
Yeah, you said you wanted a short show, and they're like, can we add this in? What about an inside baseball? What about that? I'm like, son of a... Keep
going. Well, on Inside Baseball, we'll discuss Georgia's new law banning abortion and even certain forms of contraception as the state tries to one-up the Hulu series The Handmaid's Tale. Many in the entertainment business are calling for a boycott, which is why we're discussing it. We're not getting into politics. Of course, during Big Deal or Big Whoop, we'll cover the week's top entertainment headlines. But first, as always, we turn it over to entertainment journalist extraordinaire Michael Giltz to fill us in on the weekend's box office.
That's right, and we're looking at box office around the world. We have a link to ComScore in our show notes. We also pull information from all our friends, Box Office Profit, Box Office Mojo, The Numbers, Variety, Hollywood Reporter, The LA Times, New York Times. You, our listener, you're important. But the number one movie around the world, Sperling said, ha, I know what that is. It's Avengers Endgame. Well, yes, it is, but just barely. Avengers Endgame is the number one movie around the world. It grossed $165 million over the last 3 days. I don't know what it made during the week, but it just edged out Pokemon Detective Pikachu, which opened up on Thursday here in North America and has opened up around the world. So far, that has made $161 million in its first 4 days and a total of $170 million because I think it opened up in Japan a few days early. So to clarify, Avengers Endgame is the number one movie around the world by $4,354,000. So they
this week,
this week. They just barely edged out Pokemon Detective Pikachu. So that one had a good run, a good opening, mixed reviews, but audiences seem to like it. Whereas Avengers Endgame, of course, is now the second biggest film of all time. I forget where it ranks in North America. It's at $723 million in that territory, but worldwide, it's at $2,486 million. It's about $301 million behind Avatar. That is the final roadblock between this film becoming the biggest flick of all time. It did drop another 50%. It's at $165 million. It's making less money during weekdays. I went on a weekday with a friend, and there were five people in the theater. You know, just having a middle weekday. It's not unusual. A middle of the weekday, it's on 10,000 screens. And we went, you know, at an odd time. So that doesn't mean the movie's fallen off a cliff. People are going. They're going again. And in fact, they're showing the Spider-Man trailer that has a spoiler in it during the movie. They say, all right, at the end of the film of Endgame, we will show you that Spider-Man trailer that you couldn't see until you saw Endgame. I thought that was kind of clever.
So, did you see the trailer?
I did indeed.
And did you understand why? Well, they couldn't.
It's not hard to understand at all. It includes spoilers from the Avengers Endgame movie.
It most certainly does. And I like the way they both kind of got to play it up ahead of time, you know, ahead of the movie, and then afterwards.
Yeah, that was very, very clever. So I don't know why they didn't do that from day one with the movie. When they had the most people there, you know, they knew everybody in the theater would have seen the film, get them to stick through the, instead of, since they didn't have a kicker, though they had an audio kicker, since they didn't have a visual kicker from the movie, they could have had the trailer for Spider-Man.
Wait a second. I sat through the whole thing and saw the trailer. What audio kicker did they have?
Oh, you didn't. At the end of the film, there is an audio kicker. You hear a sound of clanging as someone hammering or blacksmithing away. They're not doing Valyrian steel. So the question is, what the heck are they hammering? Is Thor making a new hammer? Now the Cap took one of his. Is it somebody villain creating some other metal object? There was all sorts of speculation about what that was. It's really a hint more than, you know, like the little scene that they've been showing in the past. But it was the sound of something happening, setting up perhaps the next season, if we can call it that, of the Avengers.
The next season. Well, oh my God. I think this season's going to be 10 years long.
This was the end of season one for Avengers. I think that's the best way to see it. It's the end of a 20 episode story.
Well, I actually did see the film this week in what I thought would be the best way possible because, you know, I had not been to the Odeon Leicester Square in I don't even know how long. I mean, a decade or longer. Mm-hmm. It is one of the premier cinemas in the world.
Absolutely.
It's where all of the red carpet premieres in the United Kingdom are held in Leicester Square. It's a big,
many, many of them.
Yeah, because the others are held around the corner at the other theaters in London. But that said, I was kind of joking around with you, Michael, beforehand, but not really. My kids can no longer go to college because I decided to see Avengers Endgame there.
And yeah, I never go to Hollywood movies in London because it's £20 or more to see a flick.
It was actually, this was the most expensive movie ticket I have ever purchased, and it was the most expensive movie ticket in London. £20, and it was not even the good seats.
How is the venue and the sound?
The sound is phenomenal. The visuals, also very, very good, even though the screen is a little smaller than one might hope for the size of the venue. The size of the venue is enormous. I mean, this thing, it might have 500, 600, 700, maybe even 800 seats. It's
800? You know, that's it?
Actually, you know what? I think after the remodel, they have kind of cut down on the number of seats. So I'm probably wrong about the number of seats.
That's not very big at all. I mean, I've seen 1,000 screen theaters in New York City. I mean, 1,000 seat theaters.
Yes, and those are traditional seats. So yes, I agree with you. It's big though. I mean, it's got like a balcony and everything. Right. So,
well, and did it compare? Were you satisfied? Did you think, wow, this was a great experience seeing the movie with that many people?
It definitely was nice seeing with a lot of people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And did you buy popcorn?
I did. And guess what? They had exactly one size of popcorn and one size of drink.
Why bother? Take what we give you. Why bother with multiple cups? I'm with them.
Yeah. And they basically, and it was, well, it wasn't cheap, but it wasn't like I didn't have to mortgage the house buy it.
Well, all right. Well, that's good. I'm glad you finally saw the movie. Now, off air, we can discuss all the big spoilers.
You mean the fact that, oh, wait, never mind.
Yeah, you can't do that. So the number one
by
movie...
By the way, if you think, okay, the number one movie was Avengers Endgame.
Oi, what are we in the time? We're never going to get it in under an hour.
Wait a second. Yeah, I think you'll appreciate this.
Okay.
Pokemon Detective Pikachu was number two around the world.
Yes.
But in Japan, for the last 2 weeks, there has been a film that has beat out both of these films, both Endgame and Pokemon, and that is Detective Conan.
What? Why is it not on our charts? What do you mean?
I know. Well, because it. I don't know why it's not on our charts. That's a good question.
Yeah, you know, it's very hard.
I think it was on our charts last week, but this week it doesn't rank up there.
Detective Conan was not on our charts last week.
Well, somebody should put it on the... Somebody should notify ComScore.
Well, it's very hard to keep track of all the info around the world. Unless people submit it and forward it to them, they're not going to know about it. So there are hits in various territories that don't make it on the charts. If you know a film, and if we're looking at the charts right now this week, Captain Marvel is at number 20 with $1.8 million at the worldwide box office. If you know a film that has grossed more than that and it's not on our chart, you got to check out the list, call us.
Yes, you can call us 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. You can also call and leave us a... Well, no, that's what I was just saying. Actually, you can also email us, okay? Dirt@showbizsandbox.com. That's DIRT@showbizsandbox.com. We're on Twitter, @showbizsandbox is our handle, or we're on Facebook, facebook.com/showbizsandbox. is where you can like our page. All of that information is on our website, showbizsandbox.com.
That's right. Back to the charts. There's some other movies opened up. At number three around the world is The Hustle, the gender-flipped remake of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, a cult classic, I would say, a terrific movie. The more you watch it, the funnier it gets. This one, not so much, but it opened to $27 million worldwide. At number four is a movie I'm so excited to see the success it's had in China. It's Capernaum, the Lebanese drama, which made $8 million over the weekend. It's at $56 million worldwide. That is stunning. What a lot of money that movie has made.
This makes no sense to me at all.
Well, it's a great film. If people saw the film, they would love it. It's emotionally wrenching and gripping. There's a bolt of possible happiness at the end. So I don't think it's, you know, blandly commercial like, say, Green Book. But I do think if most people saw it and gave it a chance, they would love it. And that's what they did in China. So full credit to them. At number five around the world is the romantic comedy Long Shot, starring Charlize Theron and Seth Rogen. That made another $7 million over the weekend. It's at $25 million worldwide. And number six is the horror flick The Intruder. That's at $20 million worldwide. And at number seven is a new film. It's about senior citizens who take up cheerleading, led by Diane Keaton. It's called Palms, and it made about $5.8 million on its opening week. And number eight is another film. I think this is a reissue. I think it's a Bollywood film gone to China. It's called Mom, which is appropriate for Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day, by the way, Sperling.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. So in Bollywood, there was a film from 2017 called Mom. A movie with that name has opened up in China. It made $5.6 million over the weekend and $6.2 million total. If that is Mom, this total does not include the money it has made previously around the world. This is just the Chinese total. So again, if you can clarify that for us, let us know. Sperling just gave you the information. Number nine is another horror flick, The Curse of La Llorona. That's at $113 million. And at number 10 is the French comedy romance We'll End Up Together. That's at $16 million. Scrolling down, looking for a new film, we have two more on the charts. I say two because I don't know what the heck Sweet Family is at number 17. If you do, again, let us know. But scrolling down at the new movies we do know about, one of them is at number 12. It's Miss and Mrs. Cops. It's a Korean crime comedy about a divorced woman who is a cop and must partner with her ex-sister-in-law. That's the best description I could get of the movie. It made about $4.2 million since it's opened up. And another new flick is a biopic about J.R.R. Tolkien, starring a terrific actor, Nicholas Hoult, but it's a boring film and has opened up very quietly here in North America. It's made $4.1 million so far.
It also opened up here in the United Kingdom.
Oh, yes. Those are the two territories where it opened up. So you found out that information about Avengers Endgame on Forbes.com. It's another website we visit often that can pull out some cool information for you.
Yes, you're talking about Detective Conan.
Yeah, trumping Avengers Endgame. Yeah, so that came from Forbes.com. So in our list of places that we go to, that's another one that we check out every once in a while.
Yes, and we also are check out Variety and the Hollywood Reporter.
Yes, we listen to all them.
All of our entertainment news. And these days, as you know, Michael, a lot of our entertainment news has revolved around the Me Too news or Me Too stories.
That's right, sexual misconduct. That's why I have an entire section devoted to it. And we probably will for the longest time as we do the show, because this isn't going away anytime soon. Oh, why do we have to keep talking about sexual misconduct? Because you keep doing it, Sperling. That's why.
So whoa. I think you may have misstated that.
I'm sorry. You
the men. Royal you. The you, royal you. The you. Royal I'm in the UK. The royal you.
Very, very nice. So a lot has happened in sexual misconduct news this week. Here's a roundup. CBS has added a human resource contact for every show in production for the network. It's not clear to me whether this is just CBS production shows or whether it also includes shows being made by other production entities. I assume that's the case. But in either case, they have added a contact. They're saying, hey, look, if you've got a problem, we want to make it as obvious and clear as possible who you should reach out to. And so they've got now that person from Human Resources for every single show.
Well, and this is kind of interesting news, this next story. Billy Bush, you remember him?
I do indeed.
He was, you know, kind of the disgraced talk show host. He was on the Today Show, but he's got to start with Extra. And he was caught on audio tape with then candidate Trump. Well, actually, then he was just like a reality show host and real estate magnate, Donald Trump. Kind of making
letting Trump josh around and make obnoxious, vile statements without calling him out on it and seeming to sort of go, ha ha, that's funny. Yeah.
Right. Well, he was shortly kind of like shown the door right after that whole incident, and President Bush was shown the White House. Sorry, President Bush, where am I going with that? Donald Trump became the president of the United States. I guess he's getting his old job back.
Sort of, yes. Once disgraced, Billy Bush will not be returning to the Today Show. And there was more stuff than just that incident. People were then brought up a history of him sort of being insensitive on air and off air. Apparently he's made amends, or people are willing to give him a second chance. Whether he deserves it, I don't know. But Extra is being revamped. That's a long-running syndicated show, a new show, much like Entertainment Tonight. Mario Lopez is one of the current co-hosts, but apparently they're renaming it Extra Extra for that extra fun, and Billy Bush is going to be the host starting in the fall. So I'm not sure what's going on there, but Billy Bush is back in the chair.
Did he have anything to say, or was it just, you know,
he said,
thanks,
I've had a long period, I've paid a price, I've tried to become a better person, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, so, did he actually say blah, blah, blah?
He said blah, 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 which is not what Alain Delon said. He just said, oh, whatever. He is one of France's great actors, and he is being honored this year by Cannes.
Well, that's right. Yeah.
He is also, of course, a cad, which is a nice way of saying he has beaten women. So Alain Delon has publicly admitted that in relationships, he has slapped women around.
He himself has said
gay people are ridiculous and they should not have the right to adopt children because it's against nature. He also loves far right racist hate groups. He loves far right politicians. He has repeatedly championed them all over the world. And so we are not criticizing Alain Delon for his past mistakes. We're criticizing him because he's around today and saying, what's the big deal? And Khan has said, well, we're honoring him for his cinematic work, not for his private beliefs. Please leave us alone. We just want to honor one of our country's greats. And they're going ahead with honoring him at this year's Cannes Film Festival.
I would like to see them do that with another one of their country's greats, or their one, you know, adopted countryman, Roman Polanski. I don't think they could get away with it.
Well, they're getting away with it, Alain Delon.
Yeah, but he's a much lower profile. He's not an internationally recognized name.
He's about as big as it gets for a French actor. You know, he and Gerard Depardieu have reprehensible private lives, and Khan could easily, you know, celebrate somebody else. But instead, they're saying, we don't care. We're going to ignore that. Whether they will pay a price for it, it'll be interesting to see, because the world's journalists are there looking for stories to cover. This is going to be one of them.
Well, they probably won't be covering Steven Spielberg, because he's running for, one of the Board of Governors seats over at the Academy rather than being in Cannes this year. But he is putting his money where his mouth is.
That's right. We gave him a little grief last week or the week before when he had people complaining to the New York Times that he felt the media was not portraying him correctly in his attitude towards streaming services, to which we said, well, you can get on the phone and talk to them because they will gladly talk to you. So if you think something's not clear, pick up the phone. But anyway, this week he's doing something very good. That is, Spielberg and Amblin TV are walking away from a hit TV show. CBS has the hit series Bull. And it stars Michael Weatherly, who has been credibly painted as a sexual harasser and inappropriate behavior on the set. And in fact, CBS paid out nearly $10 million to co-star Elijah Dushku when she had to quit the show over his despicable behavior. He made her workplace environment so hateful, she left. And they admitted that and paid her $10 million for the work and money and prestige that she lost by having to do so. But what they didn't walk away from was Michael Weatherly, They're like, a hit is a hit. CBS is sticking with him. The showrunner, Glenn Gordon Caron of Moonlighting, who has his own history, according to Sybil Shepherd, which I believe more and more as the years pass of he and Bruce Willis treating her despicably on the set of that great TV show. Well, he's reportedly returning as well. And of course, so is Michael Weatherly, who is number one on the call sheet. But Spielberg and Amblin TV are walking away from the show that they created. It's already filmed 3 seasons. It's probably going to be profitable for many years to come. It's in its 4th season, so it will get to the magic syndicated number and be a show that will do well on streaming and TV networks all over the world. And they are saying, we don't care. It's not worth the money for us to be associated with this, and we are walking away. That's pretty amazing and pretty admirable.
That is pretty amazing when you think about all of the financing that goes into a company like Amblin. Mm-hmm. There are investors whose money is on the line.
And they're saying it's more dangerous for us in terms of who we can work with and what we can do in the future to stay associated with this person. And I'm sure they have not cut off all ties to the show. They will still be getting money in some way, shape, or form from it, but they are in fact walking away, taking their name off of it, and presumably will not make as much money as they would have if they just looked the other way. Maybe they could recast him with Alain Delon.
Oh, yeah, if anybody knew who he was.
I mean, Alain Delon is one of the great actors of all time. Savvy cinema goers listening to our podcast. They all know and love the work, if not the person, of Alain Delon. And when it comes to cinema, he's a big deal.
Oh, okay. Well, I see what you're doing. Wow, you really are the engine driving this week's show along. Because if you've said the words big and deal together, it must be time for Big Deal or Big Whoop, our weekly segment where we discuss the top headlines in entertainment and tell you whether they're really important or just overhyped nonsense. Our first story, well, the CBS streaming drama The Good Fight regularly creates little short videos that punctuate the action of the show. Recently, they created one about how major U.S. companies censor themselves over China because, you know, they don't want to rock the boat. There's just too much money to be made in the Middle Kingdom to bother yourself over concentration camps for Muslims, a police state, and other unpleasant realities. FYI, we were just banned in China. Now, what did CBS do with this video about censoring content in China? Well, they censored it. Big deal or big whoop?
It's a big whoop because it's a big whoop. What are they going to do? The show put up a little placard saying we've been censored, left it up there for 9 seconds. People reported on it. CBS continues to censor that information and everybody's moved on with their life. It's probably the most that The Good Fight could do, but it ain't stopping CBS or anyone else from making lots of money in China, despite their beep treatment of the Rohingya, beep state surveillance, and other things. So there you go. I feel like I've said my piece and now we can move on.
Wait a second. You were just self-censoring.
What?
Well, yeah. Now, when the U.S. updated its music copyright law, a provision allows acts to reclaim their own copyright after 35 years. Well, recently that's begun to happen. Guess what? Unsurprisingly, the major labels have been accused of slow-walking the legal process with roadblocks and frivolous objections. Now a class-action lawsuit led by John Waite and Joe Eli is forcing their hand. It's targeted at Universal Music Group and hopes to resolve their behavior for all acts at the same time. Needless to say, UMG is fighting even the artists' right to create a class action lawsuit. They're saying you can't create a class action lawsuit. You have to do it all one at a time. Big deal or big whoop?
It's a big deal.
I agree.
Joe Ely. That's how you say his name. And you know, every time I think of you, Sperling, I always catch my breath. You know, John Waite, a fine, great voice, good hit with Missing You, but he's got a catalog of music and a lot of other artists are looking at their catalog and saying, what can I do with this? And they can do more when they control the rights to it. So we've been covering this story for a long time. This is just the latest wrinkle. It's probably a big whoop in terms of what's going to happen eventually, but if they do this and they win, then it will really become a big deal.
What was the Disney movie that had the sloths working at the DMV?
That was a very good film. That was the noir, the Chinatown noir. It's called...
It was like with a bunny rabbit and a fox.
Yeah. It was a very good film.
I could just see like the the record companies hiring people like that. Could you walk this Zootopia. Contract? Zootopia, yes. Could you walk this down to the to the legal department?
I'm on my way with your contract.
Oops, all right. I forgot my phone. Okay.
Now, the Broadway play To Kill a Mockingbird continues to set records. Last, I'm sorry, that was just too funny. Last, I feel like we should do the rest of the show that way.
Okay. Oh, yes, it would be a 4-hour podcast.
Last week, it became the highest grossing American play in Broadway history. That is shocking to me. I mean, I know, you know, ticket prices are through the roof, but that is, I mean, at first, I assume they meant it had scored like the highest grossing single week for an American play in Broadway history. But no, even though it began previews on November 1st, 2018, in Broadway years, that's like yesterday, and it has only been on the boards for 6 months, To Kill a Mockingbird has grossed more money in total than any other American play in Broadway history, with a take of $40 million in just 27 weeks. The previous winner was Terrence McNally's starry comedy, It's Only a Play. And now that's the name of the play. The name of the play was called It's Only a Play, and it starred Nathan Lane, and it grossed $37 million. Mockingbird will probably never become the top-grossing play of all time on Broadway, and you might ask why. And that's because Harry Potter and the Cursed Child opened more than 7 months earlier and is just as big a hit. Big deal or big whoop?
It's a big deal because, like you say, it points out the massive increase in Broadway ticket prices. The longest running American play in Broadway history, indeed the longest running play in Broadway history, is Tobacco Road, which ran for 7.5 years. Unfortunately, it ran for 7.5 years back in 1933 to 1941, when they probably charged, you know, a quarter, a dollar, 50 cents for a ticket. Who knows what they charge, but obviously nowhere near what they can get for To Kill a Mockingbird. But even if you think of more recent years, with all the Neil Simon comedies that ran 1,000-plus performances, Torch Song Trilogy running for over 1,000 performances, to know that this show became the biggest hit of all time just in 6 months is kind of crazy.
Well, wait a second. So now Harry Potter has not become the highest grossing play of all time yet?
It may be. I didn't say it wasn't. I'm just saying To Kill a Mockingbird will never catch up with it. I said nothing about that. I just said Harry Potter is ahead of To Kill a Mockingbird, and it will remain ahead because they're both big hits, and Harry Potter will run just as long, if not longer. So.
Oh, and I see. The qualifier here is that it's an American play.
That's correct. Yeah, Harry Potter has made more money than that. It may be the top grossing play of all time. I don't know. I assume it must be if this is the actually, it must be because that is the top grossing American play. And there's no foreign language, no foreign international play that would be bigger. Looking at the list on the charts, you know, it's Neil Simon, Tobacco Road, other things. There's Death Trap. Even that is American, I believe. Is Ira Levin American? So, yeah, I didn't spot any British plays that have run for, you know, 1,500 performances or 2,000 performances or anything like that.
Now, was this a news story or was this just something that you noticed?
It was a news story. Yeah, no, it was all covered in the theater trades.
Okay.
Why, does it not count otherwise? What made you ask that?
I'm just wondering, like, in other words, was this something that was noted by the theater trades or was it like...
Oh, no, absolutely. No, they put out a press release and everybody wrote about it, of course.
Well, we're recording Sunday night, so we'll have to wait till next week to find out who topped the first singles and albums chart ever. Compiled by Rolling Stone magazine. Now, I would have thought that was actually already done, but apparently they were publishing somebody else's list. Yes, in a shot across the bow of Billboard, the Rock and Roll magazine has partnered with Alpha Data to put out their own charts. Wait, why won't Old Town Road still be competing with Taylor Swift's Me for the crown of being the number one single in the country? Well, yes, but Rolling Stone promises more transparency on their formula for picking a winner, to update the info daily rather than weekly, and they plan to go deeper on streaming data, whatever that means. Big deal or big whoop?
Well, it's a big whoop until we see what they actually do. I think it'll probably remain a big whoop unless they really differentiate themselves. And since they're trying to do singles and album and doing the same sort of mix as Billboard, I don't think they really are. We've already spoken previously what we think they should do. Keep album sales and single sales here. Put streaming there, define everything better, and, you know, get a better clear idea of what actually is going on there, because streaming is where it's at. Stop trying to convert streaming into album sales. It's a pointless waste of time. And the fun thing is, it's easier to to track streaming because you've only got like four or five main players. Tracking radio play or tracking sales through all the online forums is difficult. Tracking streaming, that's actually pretty damn easy to do. You can name the big five right away and you're basically done.
Yeah, I mean, there's others like Bandcamp and things like that, but those are, I don't want to say negligible. Well,
and you can include them, and you should include them, but it's very, very easy to get the vast majority of streaming very quickly.
Now, speaking of charts, Netflix is releasing one of their own. I know that's shocking. I mean,
it is. Netflix, they've never done it. They don't want to give any data on their stuff, so even a ranked listing is sort of interesting from Netflix.
Right. I mean, their idea of a chart is a lot of people watched. Trust us. Now, in an experiment to see if it helps their viewers, Netflix revealed the most popular films and TV shows of April in the United Kingdom. The first chart covers five categories, with the zombie web series Black Summer being the number one drama, teen comedy The Perfect Date is the number one movie, Our Planet, the most watched documentary, You vs. Wild, the top reality show, and the Swedish crime drama Quicksand, the number one non-English language show. Big deal or big whoop?
Well, it's a big whoop. It's a little crack in the black curtain or the black box that is Netflix ratings. It's nice to have. Fascinatingly enough, all shows are from Netflix. Every single one of them, including Quicksand, is a Netflix-generated show. So the number one show in every category that they shared with us is a Netflix show. I would urge them to add one more category, number one overall. You know, what's the biggest thing watched, period? You know?
Yeah, I wonder if they're even including, like, Hollywood films.
Well, of course they are. They're on the list. You can see they list 5 or 10 things in each category. Okay. Yeah, no, of course they are. They are not just listing their own stuff. They are listing everything on Netflix. They're not playing games. But yeah, we'd love to see when Friends pops up into the charts because we know that's a really highly watched sitcom. If that was in there every week, they might get bored by that, like having Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd on Billboard for 500 weeks. But tough. If that's number 8 on the list, that's number 8 on the list. But yes, it's a little more information. It's vague and unspecific in terms of how much viewing, but it's a step forward. And I hope they do it for every territory, and I hope they include a chart that lists the top 10, period.
I could just see the person handling the Pink Floyd contract right now just slowly walking down the Okay, now this next story, oh my gosh, here's a great cautionary tale for talent and their agents and those production companies launched by, say, William Morris Endeavor and the like. Steve Harvey is one of the biggest draws in entertainment today. His talk show was probably the last successful launch of a daytime hit in the format when The Steve Harvey Show began airing in 2012. But they messed with success. When Harvey's contract with Universal ran out, he skedaddled from Chicago to LA and relaunched the show as Steve, because I guess that changed so many things. Now, he added in more celebrities and comedy along the way. That version was produced by Steve Harvey himself, along with IMG, which is the production arm of William Morris Endeavor. The show has continued to deliver, but NBC was none too pleased about seeing a successful hit taken out of their hands and wholly owned by Harvey and his agent. So now they've canceled the show and plan to launch a new talk show with pop singer Kelly Clarkson in the fall. NBC Universal has booted Harvey from the TV show Little Big Shots as well and put Melissa McCarthy in his place as the host of the variety series for Tykes. Harvey's people say, you know, he's fine since, you know, he made more money in the last 2 years and he has other projects like his radio show and books and primetime appearances with Family Feud. He's going to be fine, okay? Everybody just chill out. Big deal or big whoop?
Well, it's not a big deal in terms of the battle between the Writers Guild and the talent agencies. This isn't indicative of a writer getting screwed over because his boss is also his agent. This is a case of people, you know, running in the other direction from a successful hit and screwing over the network that was airing it. Or I should say the stations. It was NBC O&Os that were airing the Steve Harvey Show throughout the country. And they said, oh, that's great. We got a hit. Now we'd like to take it back and make more money. And NBC said, oh, really? Really? That's nice. And when they got their chance and when they felt they were ready to move, they dumped him. And then to also dump him from Little Big Shots, which is a pretty good hit ongoing series. That's kind of just a little extra. You know, they're like, yeah, we're not happy with you.
Well, so by O&O, you mean owned and operated.
That's right. The stations that NBC itself owns and operates throughout the country. There are other stations that carry the NBC network. They are limited by law to a certain degree that can cover a certain percentage of the country, though the Trump administration would like to get rid of all such restrictions and just let anybody own everything. But anyway, right now, at least, they're restricted to a certain amount of stations. And those NBC and Ono's formed the core of the stations that carried the Steve Harvey show around the country and helped turn it into a hit.
That's right. Every station should be Fox News.
All right.
It's the best.
Now let's go to Inside Baseball.
Yes, speaking of politics, it is time for Inside Baseball, where we analyze some of the headlines that have the entertainment industry buzzing. We'll explain what they mean for the business and, more importantly, how they affect you. And this week's story could affect you, A, if you live in Georgia, okay, so let's just, and you're a woman, so that's one way it could affect you, but if you don't live in Georgia, well, those shows that you watch that shoot in Georgia, they may not be shooting in Georgia for long, and thus they might, you know, their look and feel might change a bit. And that is because last week, the Republican Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia, he signed some legislation that has been dubbed the Heartbeat Bill, and it bans abortions after a fetal heartbeat can be detected. This can be as soon as 6 weeks into pregnancy.
I didn't actually read these notes because you put it at the last second. And of course, the name of the bill is misleading because it's not a heartbeat. You are not detecting a heartbeat after 6 weeks. The heart is not formed yet. So the entire name of the bill is medically misleading. So let's not call it that anymore because that's a lie.
Okay, I will say you are medically correct. And when I'm just...
I'm just pointing out that, let's not call it the heartbeat bill because that's a lie. You're not picturing, when you say a heartbeat bill, you picture a cute little baby curled up in a, it's like, no. It doesn't look like a cute little baby curled up in a ball. It's no heartbeat. Not true. And of course, that 6 weeks is far earlier than most women will ever know that they are pregnant. So basically, correct, you're banning abortion completely. And in
right. the bottom line is that they want to try and get this bill because they know it's going to be overturned by some judge somewhere. And then it will be. Well,
they want to get it upheld by the Supreme Court. Yeah, they want to ban abortion throughout the country. Yes.
Right. So that they can say, well, we didn't ban abortion. You can still have an abortion within the first 6 weeks. So you basically have to be taking a pregnancy test pretty much every day of your life if you're a woman. And you don't want to become
pregnant. They are also banning many forms of contraception, such as IUDs. They are also telling a woman, if she leaves Georgia to go to another state where abortion is legal, they can arrest her for that. It's an amazingly restrictive, truly Handmaid's Tale type bill. And Alabama, they're trying to end, they're passing a similar bill that will get rid of any exception for rape or incest. So if you're raped or your parent rapes you, you still have to keep the baby. Lovely.
Yeah, well, just make sure you're opening the orphanages because you want all of these babies to be born. So, you have to have some place to put
them. It's a controversial bill. And of course, Hollywood people spoke out.
Yes. So Jordan Peele and J.J. Abrams, they were about to start shooting and are about to start shooting their HBO drama Lovecraft County in Georgia.
Country.
Oh, I thought it was country. And when I read it, it said County.
Be country, but it's a great book. I read it. We talked about it on the show. Maybe I've got the name wrong, but yeah, it's a terrific series. A terrific book, and I'm really looking forward to their adaptation. And they said,
in the Hollywood Reporter, they say county.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. All right.
So it's either Lovecraft County or country. Either way, it's being shot in Georgia. It's too late to pull the plug on that particular production. However, what Peele and Abrams said, and this is a joint statement, they said, in a few weeks, we start shooting our new show, Lovecraft County, and we'll do so standing shoulder to shoulder with the women of Georgia. Governor Kemp's fetal heartbeat abortion law is an unconstitutional effort to further restrict women and their health providers from making private medical decisions on their terms. Make no mistakes, this is an attack aimed squarely and purposely at women. Abrams and Peele went a bit further by saying, we stand with Stacey Abrams, who I guess is the,
she was on the losing side of running for governor of Georgia, but she's a major political figure in the state and the country.
Right. They stand with her and the hardworking people of Georgia and will donate 100% of our respective episodic fees for this season to two organizations leading the charge against this draconian law, the ACLU and the ACLU of Georgia and Fair Fight Georgia. Those are the two organizations. And he says, they say, we encourage those who are able to funnel any and all resources to these organizations to do so. So right, that's what they're doing. And then there are other people calling for an outright ban on shooting in the state.
Right. Other people have said we will not shoot in that state. The MPAA, I believe, said, look, these have been stopped by the courts previously, so we're just going to hold off and wait and see what happens legally. They won't go into effect right away, so we don't need to take action right away. But sure, many people are angry and upset and saying, look, we can take our dollars elsewhere. That's all right. You want to pass that law in your state? That's okay, but we're not going to do business there.
And Melissa Milano, the actress, she's saying, I'm not only taking my dollars elsewhere, I'm taking my whole body elsewhere. I'm going on strike. That's right. You heard it. Strike. Except she said sex strike, and she said it on Twitter, and you would have thought the world ended.
Only if you follow Twitter. Yeah, so she made a comment saying, look, it's not safe for women to have sex, and so let's, like Aristophanes the birds, let's have a sex strike until we overturn this law.
Wasn't this like a Liz Estrada thing?
Was it Lysistrata? I thought it was the birds. I got the wrong name. I beg your pardon. I do have the right name of the book. Maybe they've changed the name for the TV series, but the novel, which is a series of stories interconnected, is in fact called Lovecraft Country. Maybe they changed the name for the TV show.
Maybe. Maybe they just wanted it to be a county. Make it a little smaller.
That's right. So yes, thank you for having a light whimsical air while you read the story about abortion laws in Georgia. Not quite sure why you went with that tone.
I'm sorry. I blame it all on the sloths.
Well, as well you should. You're right. Liz Estrada is. I'm always. It's. I had the right playwright, but it's. It is in fact Liz Estrada, the one where they're at war and the women have a sex strike to try to end the war. A broad right. body comedy.
The reason I know that is because that was a play that was done in high school in the high school. Yes, exactly. And it only dawned on me much later in life that I was like in the ninth grade and the high school drama club was actually performing this.
like, with giant phalluses? Because that's what you do in the show. Really?
No. But right. It was very much like, you know, like a sex strike.
That's interesting. With all the sexual innuendo and body jokes, that's a bizarre play to choose for a high school production. I saw a production of Legally Blonde, the musical, at an all-girls Catholic high school over the weekend. My friend directs them. You know, she and another woman who at the school co-direct the show, so I go there to show support, and it's always fun. The lead actress was actually quite good, but they had a couple things that they had to negotiate with the school so that they could perform it, you know. It's a Catholic school, and it's a kind of a body show.
Yeah, you know, other, you know, you saw that over the weekend. I saw Happy Cleaners, which is, you know, kind of an Asian American film that's making the rounds of the film festival circuit.
Oh, was it any good?
Actually, it was. It was fun.
Great.
I mean, in a very, you know, dramatic way. It's a dramatic film, but I thought it told an interesting story of generations, the, you know, a first, you know, generation of immigrants and second generation immigrants and the Korean, you know, Korean Americans and the conflict between those two generations.
Well, there's always conflicts between generations, aren't there? But let's tell the story of two talents from Hollywood who will no longer be with us.
Okay, well, actress Peggy Lipton of Mod Squad and Twin Peaks, unfortunately, she died at the age of 72.
That's right. She's the real-life mother of Rashida Jones, the actress, and she played her fictional mother on the TV show Angie Tribeca. She was the ex married for a number of years to Quincy Jones, the legendary producer, but an interesting, solid career, a model-turned-actress, a real beauty and a real talent. I mean, you saw her on Mod Squad. She won lots of Emmy nominations on a show that was really, you know, a hit and geared towards kids, and then really came back to life on Twin Peaks. That was so great to see her have that second career peak with the David Lynch series, which a few people will forget.
Wait, so Rashida Jones is her
daughter with Quincy Jones. She's the mother of Rashida Jones.
I did not know that.
Yes, that's true. Also, who died this week is Oscar-winning screenwriter Alvin Sargent. He died at 92. He's often considered a master of adaptations. He adapted a lot of books into films and other projects. He starred in TV, grinding out scripts for shows like Ben Casey, Alfred Hitchcock, Route 66, and the like. He won Oscars for Julia and Ordinary People, the Robert Redford film. He also did key work like The Sterile Cuckoo, which had a great performance by Liza Minnelli, Peter Bogdanovich's Paper Moon, which won Tatum O'Neill, the youngest person to win an actress award in Broadway history, Oscar history up to that point. He did Dustin Hoffman's Straight Time and Bobby Deerfield. He did the story for Bill Murray's What About Bob? And he did work that is happily uncredited on the Barbra Streisand film A Star Is Born. But he was partnered.
Why are you laughing at that?
There was a pause there for you to step in, and you said nothing. It's like you were doing your nails.
No, you know what I was thinking of, though? Peggy Lipton being the mother of Rashida Jones, right? And I was thinking of the fact that Ezra Koenig, what's the guy's name? Vampire Weekend, the lead singer of Vampire Weekend.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah, he's not married to her.
They're in a relationship.
They're in a relationship. They have a son, and they just released an album.
Yes, they did. It's number one on the charts to this week.
Right. And so I was thinking, like, wow, like, to release an album, then your mother-in-law, effective mother-in-law, dies the next week.
Well, I'm sure effective. You don't need to say this. She's not his mother-in-law, but a woman, I'm sure, near and dear to him. Yeah, no, it's a week where these things clash against each other. But speaking of people who were together but not married, that was the case for Alvin Sargent and producer Laura Ziskin. They were partnered for 25 years, though he married her just shortly before, I think, she died when she had cancer. I think maybe they made that decision. That's right. It was very touching, yeah. But they were partnered for many years. And just when his career seemed to have petered out, he was easing into retirement at 75, 2 Oscars to his credit, lots of great work, a late period hit comedy with the What About Bob film starring Bill Murray. Then she brought him into Spider-Man, the Spider-Man franchise starring Tobey Maguire and directed by Sam Raimi. A lot of people had their fingerprints on the first Spider-Man screenplay. Beyond who was credited, there's a lot of argument and debate, but people agree Alvin Sargent contributed to it, and that was a great film. And then he wrote the screenplay for Spider-Man 2, which is probably even better and is a classic in the comic book superhero genre. And then he did Spider-Man 3 as well. So a late period left turn. He was still adapting, you know, turning the comic book into a movie, and helped, along with other people, do great work in those movies. Those are some of the best superhero films of all time.
I would agree. That first Spider-Man movie was great, second one.
Yeah, the first two were just terrific, and then the studio would not let them make the movie they wanted the third time around. God knows why.
Yeah, they should have just let them do whatever they wanted.
Yeah, you would think after all the money they made, they'd be given that pass. And you'd think after all the money we made, people would let us talk on and on and on. But no, every show must come to an end.
And that's why this week the show is under an hour. We have not even been recording for an hour. Can you believe it?
No, that's terrific.
And that is why you should subscribe to our show, although I just made that last part up. You can subscribe to our show in iTunes, the Google Play Store, Microsoft Marketplace, Stitcher, anywhere they give podcasts away for free. You can subscribe to our show, rate and review our show. It does help us out when you do. It helps other people find the show out when you rate and review it as well. You can find that information, ways to subscribe to us, on our website, showbizsandbox.com. That's where you'll find links to all the stories we've discussed on today's episode. It's also where you'll find ways to contact us, dirt@showbizsandbox.com. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. You can also call and leave us a voicemail. The number to call is 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. We're also on Twitter, @showbizsandbox is our handle. Facebook.com/showbizsandbox is where our Facebook page can be liked. Now, the music that you hear at the beginning and end of each show is by the popular indie rock group MGMT. They have their own website. It is whoismgmt.com. Michael Giltz has a website, and every week it's something new and exciting. What is it this week, Michael?
I have no idea.
.com.
.com. I was trying to find out the name of the company that Ryan O'Neill was pretending to come from, selling Bibles to recently widowed women in the film Paper Moon, and I failed to do that before the end of the show.
Okay.
So BiblesRUs.com.
You could have done it in a very slow
way. Could have. But I won't.
But, well, if you can't find any of Michael's writing on any one of those websites, why not read some of his coverage of the entertainment industry on MichaelGiltz.com, where all of his work is aggregated. Some of my work can be found on CelluloidJunkie.com. Until next week, play nice.